This week on RSBNB Update, necromancy has evolved, RuneScape combat. We recap the promise of necromancy, discuss how it's landed, and highlight the issues that necromancy exposes in RuneScape's combat system. Between conjures, cookies, and the undead, necromancy is alive. This is RSBNB Update, episode 954, recorded Wednesday, September 27th, 2023. Conjuring Cookies. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, welcome.
Thank you, Shane.
Been having a good week.
You know, we're chopping wood again. Back to chopping wood.
I think that makes two of you then, because Thaxi's also here. Welcome aboard.
Hello, hello. On that Elder Tree grind.
Yeah, yeah.
Good back.
But this week we're going to be running over the Necromancy Combat Review. We kind of had a bit of a break in between the quest coverage, quest and lore coverage, and where we wanted to go for combat overview, because necromancy's been out a little bit. We know how it works now. We want to kind of just, you know, take a step back and see what it's done for combat in RuneScape, and if it's lived up to what was promised with that. So we're going to go through that. We're going to also go through Thok's smashing buffs, but before any of that happens, I have to thank the wonderful people of the RSBNB Update Experience tier on Patreon, for whom which RSBNB Update would not be possible. This week I want to thank Andrew C., Drama Free, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Maniac, Ricky A., Rippeth, Seth W., and The Naked Captain. And of course, with this, we'll be talking more about where you can sign up like these people have a little bit later in the podcast, but spoilers, it's patreon.com/RSBNB. We also, of course, have full show notes publicly posted on our website at update.show, and with that also brings along our community Discord at rsbnb.com/discord and the friends chat at Bits Bytes. I can be found in-game at Shane12088. Tanis is at Tanis79, and Thaxi is just Thaxi. I'm the only one with numbers in the name. All right. Fox smashing buffs.
Neat
little gift from Jagex this week, hey?
Not expected, but certainly appreciated. I mean, I logged in on Monday and somebody's like, hey, make sure you get the buffs before we start. I was doing a raid. And I'm like, what buffs? What do you mean? I was literally at Wars Retreat having this conversation. Did not see the cauldrons whatsoever. And yeah. I had to do a whole little dialogue thing right before teleport to Mezcap. Oops.
Yeah, so what you get is you get, of course, the full Elder Overload potion, and if you've unlocked salves, you get the boost of an Elder Overload salve. Also with this, all death costs are free for the duration of this event, and rather than going to Death's Office, you respawn at the nearest hub, meaning your familiars don't die. Also, you get Tier 4 luck throughout this event. Sign of Lives will reset whenever you enter a bank area. Combat auras will reset automatically when their duration ends, and you can choose your Reaper task each and every day, and when you complete a Reaper task, you will get double the points. Plus, also for Tanis, Slayer Masters will now offer a choice between two tasks without paying for VIP coupons.
Basically, really good time to start some endgame stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
If you wanted to learn a boss, if you haven't, you know, first steps into like a Raxor or something. Yeah. Not that my death is normally all that expensive.
No,
but
not anymore.
I mean, not losing a Blood Reaver or a familiar of some kind is really nice.
Yeah. Tanis, does this push you to do any Slayer with necromancy, combat, necromancy, PVM?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We'll talk more about it later. I have done a decent amount a real decent amount of Slayer with necromancy. I mean, that's been the
it's your bread primary and butter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I've leveled it, right? So yeah, because I didn't have rituals to have my souls. That was it, right? Like, I'm not I didn't do that stuff for XP. I did combat. So it's I've done quite a bit, but nothing ground changing. And the way I found that out with Brazio, and yeah, you know,
And that goes into the entire combat discussion we're going to have with that. And, you know, I feel like we have to address the elephant in the room with this.
Don't think about it.
was this planned? Or was this to, to kind of turn the channel off the Hero Pass stuff?
Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Just eat the cookies, Shane.
I have been eating the cookies so much so that I've been having good luck with PVM this week with this.
Well,
I mean,
you don't need to worry about why the cookies are there. They're good
very
cookies,
simply,
right, Shane?
Very simply, we don't know why the cookie is there. It could be an apology. They could have put it together in a week. I do believe that. But it could be something that they'd had planned. It's the right time of the year for it. I wouldn't be surprised if we had another one in a few months that, you know, is more in line with a typical end of year timeline. But either way, like Dennis is saying, it's nice to have it. And we don't really know for sure, right? People can say they're sure, but they're not sure. So
the only people
that's where it stands.
The only one who knows for sure is Mr. Jagex on that, right?
Yeah, I mean
unless they tell us, but I doubt they'll say anything about it.
Well, whether it's an apology or a distraction, I mean, it doesn't, I don't know, doesn't even matter.
Yeah, it does. It's a good cookie. It's like one of those.
Exactly. It's like doesn't matter because the cookie is good. I'll eat it regardless.
It's like your ultimate form of cookie, right? So that's exactly what it is.
Apparently, I wouldn't mind a woodcutting cookie, but.
Right. Yeah.
It is.
Well, there's a double XP
cook.
Weekend on the way at some point in
that's true. That's
late
true.
October.
I haven't gotten any XP in the last like almost 20 hours of woodcutting. I have
you guys
a lot
say that,
of Corbin
but somewhere there's a mom's group that is all pissed off that all these cookies are contributing to like the obesity of children and playing games.
Hey. Just the holidays are coming out
on XP, man.
Oh, is this like
just
schools not being allowed to have banana bread?
What?
I haven't heard that one,
what
Shane.
What sacrilege is that?
There was some school somewhere here in Canada where banana bread got banned because most banana bread has nuts in them, so they just banned banana bread from the school.
Oh, interesting. As a person who is allergic to nuts, I love banana bread, man. Oh, we had some great, like, oh my goodness, what was it?
Didn't you just
we had, like this banana yeast starter that we used? Then I was like a kid. Oh my god, I think that was in elementary school. Am I after? All right. Anyways,
okay.
Off the rails. Sorry
yeah, you
about
told
that.
The listeners lots there.
And that is exactly what Jagex was trying to do.
Bum bum ba da.
But nonetheless, of course, we know when you go eat that cookie. You take it with you to your favorite boss or your favorite slayer task. You're probably going to be using necromancy with that, aren't you?
Yep,
at this point
be...
in the game.
Well, you could. I think there's a lot of people who have best-in-slot gear for other styles that like using that best-in-slot gear for other styles.
Yeah, that's true.
And are very happy to just let necromancy exist. But
yeah. And, you know, I feel like we can open this up by saying that Magic melee ranged didn't get any worse with necromancy. They just got eclipsed in terms of the amount of DPM that's able to be put out and the amount of inputs that are able to go in for it.
That's it. Yeah, it's not that it's like when you look at the high end damage for stuff. I'm not confident how much it shifted, to be honest. It just is way easier to have a relatively higher damage output with necromancy right now.
Yeah, exactly. So. And that gets to what Jagex wanted to do with necromancy at the very beginning, and what they outlined is why they were doing this as a combat skill. And, you know, of course, we have the reasons. Necromancy is interesting. They wanted to do necromancy different than all the other games do it. They wanted it to be consensual necromancy. And the biggest thing that underscores all of that is that it was supposed to be a fresh take on combat, as if they did EOC in 2022.
Right.
And this was the first thing that when I heard this that actually made me get really interested in the idea of necromancy was, it's, you know, can we really redo the combat system of the game with a new combat skill? Or are there going to be too many fundamentals that can't change? And for people who have been talking to me the last month and a bit, you'll know where I stand on that. But I think it's important to say and examine right now, did necromancy provide that fresh coat of paint, a new take on combat that they were promising? Where do you guys feel about this?
Well, I mean, I don't feel it's good. It's as you guys, I mean, you know, this wasn't a game changer for me, really, like I thought it would be. You know, you say it's easier to put DPS out. It definitely isn't as easy as what I thought it would be.
It's not summon conjures and let them go. It's summon conjures and then have a regular DPS rotation to support them.
Yeah, you know what it is? RuneScape combat.
Yeah.
And they're in... I mean, you know, it's like I really like necromancy. I like all the stuff around it. It's a good update. It didn't change the fundamentals
of Slayer for you. And I want to underscore this, that we're going at this from the PVM angle and the Slayer angle, because those are both legitimately valid in terms of what you want to do, right?
Right. I mean, fighting big things or fighting... Honestly, some of the Slayer monsters are other big things, but small things.
Yeah.
So, and I wonder with this if, and this is one perspective I haven't been able to fish out yet. I haven't been able to find somebody who left when EOC came out and came back for Necromancy, or I haven't been able to find somebody who started in the last month and has been using Necromancy as their primary. And seeing how they go with this. What I am able to tell you from what they wanted to do with their fresh take on this is that they did accomplish the idea that they wanted to, with, in effect, making it less punishing if you miss one of your thresholds, if you miss, you know, one of your ultimate activations. If you
and not
miss...
just accuracies, you mean just like miscasting it? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's what I mean.
You're not using your adrenaline.
Miscasts.
Right.
Yeah, miscasts, and you know the accuracy system is, you know, for the other styles, effectively a black art until it was illustrated by one of the J-mods on live stream. And I feel like the necromancy accuracy model is the way to go on this, where it just lowers your hit if you don't have the right kind of accuracy.
We all remember, and I think at least a few of us have recently started old school accounts where, like, you, at the early game, you hit, like, a quarter of your attacks. Like, that is the quintessential, like, old RuneScape combat is you miss a lot. And boosting your accuracy really matters. And this feels much more satisfying to me. Right, like, to me, the big system changes that came with Necromancy, right? You've got your summons, but, like, the biggest, like, systematic things for me are the adrenaline cost change, right?
Yeah.
Things do not just cost 15 and 100% adrenaline anymore and have a threshold, like, you have to have this much to ride. They added in the crit scaling, and they changed the accuracy. Those are the three big, like, systems that are unique currently to Necromancy that they're, you know, saying, oh, we'd consider adding these to other styles.
And the base,
I think,
and
all three of those changes,
and I just also
feel
want to add into that
better.
The basics are just so much more powerful.
The basics are worth, you don't have to deprioritize them as much. And that, like, we're going to talk about rotations, I think, a little later in the episode.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about, like, especially on Revolution, you can make some very functional, very simple Revolution bars with this, right? Revolution for the other styles, for me, is often 9 or 10 abilities long. For necromancy, you're honestly like 3 to 6 is like, that's probably where you should cap it. Like you need a lot less skills to be functional.
Yeah, and that's what we said initially when on launch week is that, you know, this is actually turning out to maybe be simpler than we thought in terms of building rotations.
Yes.
And, you know, we'll get into that, of course, all in good time. But
I think it's also important to note, like back to your original question, before we move too far, that like necromancy to me has options. Like, if I'm doing different things, I'm able to actually like with ranged, my bar is pretty much set. I remove the dots for next. That's really the only change I almost ever make.
Yeah, and change out two-handed versus dual wield.
Right. With this, I actually do, like, when I change activities, I fully remake my bar. I change the size of my revolution window. Yeah. Like, it's something I go into the settings for that, like, multiple times a day if I'm doing a Slayer. Because there are different tools for different jobs. And again, we'll talk about that later, but, like, if I'm making, like, again, I promise the micro lesson is coming.
We're still waiting for some things on that before we commit.
Yeah, we're trying to, like, let them settle a little bit. But, like, when I wake up for the other shells, I say, here's the abilities in most to least damage order in necromancy. It's no. Here's the abilities that you'll always have. There's, like, 5 of them. And then there's, like, what do you add? What do you need? What else fits the situation?
Do you need a heal? Do you need some AoE?
Do you need area damage? Do you need heals? Do you need to just have burst available to, like, kill, like, a phase on an ad that's going to enrage, like, even a rune dragon or something, right? I mean, not that you can, you still gotta have raid, but, like, bad example. Point stance. Like, you have to actually look into your toolbox and use it. And to me, to your original question of, is this what EOC should have been? Is this a goal of, like, does it fit the goal of, like, making RS3 combat feel like it's using the systems that they've built effectively? I'd say yes. I think it's done a good job with that.
And does it also feel substantially different than Magic Melee ranged?
That's a whole potentially different conversation. I think kind of yes. I think in some ways yes, and in some ways no. And I think that's a good thing that, like, there's some pieces that feel familiar, and then you've got, like, conjures and these extra resource stacks, which are a unique mechanic.
Necrosis, souls, and adrenaline.
Yeah, and even stuff like fury stacks on your skeleton, right? Like, your skeleton does more damage the longer it's alive, up to those 25 attack stacks. Yeah. And so a skeleton that's been alive for 30, like, things like that you can really optimize for if you want to.
Tanis, does that change the perspective on where you're coming from with that frame? In that it's not so much, you know, one set rotation or, you know, one set bar as it would be for ranged, for example. But with this, it's about more so adapting your tool set to what you're doing and how that's evolving combat.
Yeah, that, and it does. Okay. I have to separate myself with what I see necromancy actually doing. Right? Like, I have no doubt it's doing exactly what Taxi says it's doing. But it's, that's not what I don't know. That's just not what I thought. People act like it's combat for dummies and it's easy, and
it's not. That
hasn't been my experience, you know, at all.
If you want to be effective with it, you have to manual some things. Like, in some, there are very few situations, and those situations are very straightforward, simple combat. Every other type of combat in the game, you have to manual something if you want to use all of your resources and get the damage out of it. The other spells, you can fully revo.
Right, and case in point here, even fully revoing basics with other combat styles, I've been, as folks might know, killing Raziel, and I have on my revolution bar the skeleton and my basics, but there are still times in that fight where I will manually activate certain basics because I need one of those resources instead of just, you know, letting revolution handle itself.
Well, I think that ended up being
that's your brother's styles too.
That ended up being a whole nother issue that I didn't see coming. But those resources and knowing which was which, there was
Necrosis is not visually clear.
It's hard to see, and I don't, you know, I never really was clearly understood it. I mean, it was just more than, I don't know.
Like, the fact that it only appears first on your buff bar when you have a full 12 stacks, like, and it moves on your buff bar otherwise, is just, it frustrates me to no end. Like,
and
I'll find
credit,
it, but I have good eyes, and I have to, you know, search for finding what my resources
are. And to their credit, I think it was Mod Ryan was working on some prototypes for streamlining that and making it so that it's visible directly above your character avatar.
Oh, that'll be good.
It's a lot of does have visual clutter. I understand where they might not want it. Especially like if I have I have 12 necrosis decks right now, do they go away if I don't have a health bar up? I guess they probably would. But
yeah, and
extra
and that becomes a whole UI problem to kind of design around, but that's out of the scope of, you know, how it actually interacts with combat and whatnot. So
all I can say is it's not visually clear and it is a problem, and I know they're aware of it. And I just want, I'm waiting for the fix because I'm sure it's coming and I hope it doesn't get shelved.
Yeah, exactly. And with that, you wind up with, in effect, a combat style that I want to say, it was so weird. Like, in terms of the hype and anticipation for Necromancy, it started out as being, okay, I'm cautiously optimistic about this, and that gradually continued on that path until release. And then I started interacting with it on release, and the hype actually kind of went down a bit, because, like you said, Tanis, it wasn't necessarily changing the fundamentals of the game, and we'll get to that in a bit about why that can't be done. But once you actually, and I don't know, Max, if this has been your experience either, but once I actually started diving deep into it and min-maxing it, it started feeling more enjoyable to me. But maybe that's just the way I play games. I don't know.
I think that's true for almost anything, right? Is that, like, when you get to feel competent at something, I think, like, a similar example would be like everybody's Hermod grind. I think many people experience this to some degree where you start off and like you have to bring food and he's like doing things. And I think for the majority of people, by the time they hit their like 300 kills or whatever it is to get all the plates, like everybody's gotten whatever their times are, they've gone down by at least half for most of the people I've talked to. And they're feeling much more competent. Like, even though it's just a simple boss, everybody got mechanically better, right, during that fight, and they dialed it in, and they had a rotation, or a, like, I don't even want to say rotation, but they've got a routine set. When the boss appears, they know, generally speaking, what they're going to do, even if that is just click him in Revo, you know, and walk away. And I think settling into that routine is a large part of the RuneScape experience.
Okay. And I think one of the things that they did really well with Hermod is that it was, in effect, a boss on training wheels that started with the quest version, and then you throw yourself into it if you're, of course, doing the power armor track. And like you said, you're going to need a good number of kills there. Some people need more than others, but that's okay. And
The drop scheme, though. 1 in 10 is good.
Yeah, that's a happy number. You wind up in a situation, I think, where the boss, in many ways, was fulfilling what they wanted to do in terms of lowering the barrier to entry for PVM, because first you fight it in a quest, and then you're like, oh, well, if I did it in the quest, and, you know, it's doable with tier 60 gear, maybe I can go there, and maybe I can learn this boss, and with that, you know, hone my necromancy skills. And I think that was the beginning of the lowering of the PVM barriers with Necromancy. And remember what they said with Necromancy. They wanted it to be easy to learn but difficult to master.
Yeah, I want to...
So, I agree that they met that goal.
Yeah, and that... for me, that was one of the like cruel things about it. In a way, like, I loved the fact that you could make your stuff as you went up, and it purposely made like you had to engage in different boss content as you're moving up. Like, that was really fun for me. And I had fun until I got to RuneScape, you know, combat in game. And then it was over. Like, that little, oh, this has been fun. It was done.
I wonder if that's a user interface accessibility issue for you, or if it's more fundamental to Necromancy.
I don't know. And I mean, that's why, like, I say, I think it's a good skill. I think it's great. I mean, and that wasn't your experience or Daxi's experience. So, you know, the what you hear, you know, word on the street is it made things easier. So, you know, I don't blame the skill in any way.
You also have to remember that, like, I can't necessarily speak for Shane on this, but at least for me, like, for example, Nex, I've done a lot of Nex, like, just a lot of Nex. And going in, even with a new style and tier 70 weapons, I knew how to do Nex. I knew where I needed to have burst damage, and I'd had most of my Hermod kills, so I knew what that looked like. And so I went in and I one-shot my Nex kills. And like, we had a lot of clanmates who didn't. You know, and maybe that is like that in particular, the tier 80 for the power, and I think the tier 90 for the tank to some degree, both, like, they were.
What was the tier 90
like,
tank one again? That was the Jad one, right? Plus a Reaper task,
no,
I think.
I think it was God Rex? Wars 2.
Yes.
It was God Wars 2, but.
It was 10 kills at each God Wars 2.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's a good point. That's a good point. We have to go to the clan chat on that and what we saw. And, of course, what we've seen in the wider community is that Necromancy has got people PVMing and doing PVM that they hadn't done before. Like, you and I both probably remember how many times we saw in clan chat people saying, hey, I got my first next kill. What's next?
It pulled a lot of people into PVM. Like, I think that process, that slow growth, pulled a lot of people into PVM. Like, I mean, that I remember when I didn't know anything about PVM, and I was scared as heck to even go into basic God Wars 1 in, like, you know, 2015 when I was starting that journey. I was doing it for Master Questscape. Must have been 2016 then. But, like, it was whenever Master Questscape got announced and they said, all right, you're going to need these lore books, I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to go and learn how to do these things. And so I went, I'm just going to do one or two kills. We're just going to get in, get out. I paid for an AOD carry. I have 600 AOD kill count now. Oh my God. You know, it's come a long way. But getting into the combat and, like, learning, like, that was my first things was I need it for Master Questscape. And I think Master Questscape is not incredibly an accessible piece of content necessarily. That's a big list.
Yeah.
But Necromancy, if everyone has to do it, like, it's that same thing. It's, oh, I just need a couple of kills. I just need like 10 kills of these God Wars 2 bosses. Oh, these aren't, you know, I think for a lot of people, and again, accessibility issues notwithstanding, I think a lot of people who were afraid, who hadn't gotten into bossing, not because of personal challenges, because they were afraid of the bossing, or they like didn't, you know, stepping out of their comfort zone.
Or they didn't know where to start.
Pulled a lot of people out of their comfort zone. I mean, I think that may have been the idea with it, and I think it kind of succeeded. Just looking at, like, standing in Worst Retreat during this event and seeing the stream of people going through, clearly PVM in the game is well and alive.
And that puts together an interesting question with that. You know, is RuneScape 3 destined to become even more of a PVM-focused game with Necromancy? Of course, you'll always, you know, be able to chop wood, go mine rocks, and fish. But at the same time, well, maybe there's something more to be said about PVM and working within the in the system we have and getting people involved in it.
It comes down to what your end game looks like and what the end game content they want to make is, I think, right? Like, there are still people for whom, you know, 200 mil in every skill, that's their end game.
Yeah.
And maybe then they'll get into, like, maybe with or without bossing, right? There's some people that are really trying to do it all, but there are also people who literally just, like, I'm going to get 200 mil in agility 8 times. And that's their end game. They're happy with that. You know? Like...
I know of the specific play you're mentioning on that.
Yeah, that's a very specific example. But, like, you know, different people, that's like, you get people who are collection logs, people who, like, just love clues. They just love doing clues.
Or even Slayer collection logs.
Mm-hmm. Or merchanting, even, which, grumble, but it's valid. Or, you know, there's any number of, like, people for whom they play the game with a different goal in mind. The game is designed for that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think there is a pull to try to make the bossing accessible, because I think it's content that a lot of the mods like to make.
And it's probably the content that they want to play as well, and they want more people to be able to get into that if I know the people who built Necromancy well enough on that. So,
right.
And just to recap, this is the path you take to get into making Necromancy armor. First one is 5 chickens. Then it's 25 trolls. Then 50 right. undead. Then 75 demons. Then 50 souls from at least something level 70 or higher, and Anku residue. Then after that, on the tank side, we're up to tier 70 now. This is the Barrows Brothers and 100 dragon souls. Tier 80 is God Wars 1. Plus 150 Slayer Assignment Souls. And then tier 90 is God Wars 2, plus Jat, plus a Reaper crew task for tank. And yep. that's the path they take to getting you involved in that. And then by the time you're into doing God Wars 2, I think you'll have a good enough idea about whether or not you like this, and you want to go over to the other power armor track and do more PVM intensive things to get those ones.
Yeah.
And that's that onboarding track about, you know, you make the style easy to learn but difficult to master. Well, you're going to do a bit of that mastering as you progress through the tank tasks and then the power tasks.
But I also think, too, like the people, just like Daxie was talking about, the people that knew how to PVM and already kind of understood basic systems were able to take it to just a stupid degree, right? Like,
I mean, we didn't have to learn. That's the thing, is that for us it was not onboarding, it was a to-do list. And for me, as a person who likes to check off to-do lists, looking at the comp and all that, like, yeah, I enjoyed that, but it was just a to-do list. It was not an incentive. They didn't need to pull me into PVM, you know? I don't think those tasks were there for me.
No.
And I was happy to do them, but I was not the audience for those tasks. Like, for the ambassador kill, I see all these people talking about darting it. Yo, dog. I'm not going to lie to you. I took my tier 90 weapons, and I found a group. And I got my ambassador, like, we did the dungeon and the ambassador, I think it was about 12 minutes total.
And then you and I do it. Like, for mine.
Yeah, and then I do it with Shane. Like, I'm just, like, you know, again, the tasks are not for me. The tasks are not for us. They're not. Like, if their goal is to pull people into PVM, they don't need to do that for us. And so the challenge
and in many ways, the existing PVMers get the tier 70, 80, 90 power armor.
I started with that. I probably should have done tank first, in hindsight. But I needed tier 90 power armor.
Yeah.
I hold pretty strongly that, honestly, the tank is kind of based. Like... That tank armor is really good.
I didn't put a section in there in the show for this, but we should go over how those are actually revolutionary and changing things. We'll do that next break here on this, because I also want to say that there's people out there who have never owned tier 90 power armor before, like me, and I'm able to have that relatively easily here, and I appreciate that.
Shane, you don't have a set of Serenic. I'm just going to pause the show for a hot second. I mean, we'll keep talking. We'll
sorry. I do have Serenic. Sorry. You're right.
You're up to tier 90.
You have master work.
I will say, yo, shout out to range right now. A little off topic. The fact that you can get a full set, you can get a, I think it's a tier 85 weapon and tier with, what was I looking at the other day? Like, you can get a tier 85 range weapon. Oh, the blowpipe. You can get a tier 88 blowpipe and a full set of tier 82 ranged power armor right now for a grand total of, I think it was like 11 mil.
Right. And
like, yo, guys.
Well, do you remember when
with
I started?
Elite Robin, like,
do you remember when I started range. PVM? And I was deciding about whether to go magic or ranged, and I looked at the prices of the endgame armor, and that was the decision for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Valid. Honestly. Like, I mean, there was a reason that at that point that mage armor was more expensive. That was the start of, you know, God Wars 3 as a time frame for people. Like, let's be real about what was happening here, that, like, wands had just become very expensive. But...
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
So, I guess to just bring this all home, it did lower the barrier to entry to PVM for people who, in effect, didn't already have that list of, or have that experience in those bosses, let's just say, and wanted to, you know, go and do this as part of necromancy, as we saw in our clans, of course. But I think on the other hand, in terms of, you know, just the reframe of a fresh take on combat as if EOC were designed in 2022 to make it easier to get into, I think also think Tanis's perspective is incredibly valid on there.
Yes.
In that if you have had issues with mechanics before, you've had issues with just in general, I want to say how cumbersome it can be to set up an action bar and, you know, build presets and all that. This is what we're talking about with this.
Yeah, you can make something functional, but in terms of optimizing it, like they said, easy to learn, hard to master. Like, until there are guides and people out there who can really give you a breakdown of what to look at when, like, this is, it was not an easy thing to, like, get into and figure out how this was supposed to be done, supposed to, big air quotes, everything
yeah,
works.
Yeah, and I mean, Mud Sponge said this very well. The other day on social media somewhere, he said, you know, for the first week and a half of necromancy, everybody thought bloat was garbage.
I mean, to be fair, they did buff it so
yeah,
that
I was
it does
say, didn't
60%
they do some work
more damage. So,
yeah.
Like, we're going to say that was valid.
And then we had also concerns garbage. With, you know, death skulls and all that, and that was fixed and entirely rewritten. Yeah. But...
And,
you know,
and I should clarify, bloat wasn't garbage. Bloat was really good if you had a lot of targets and were killing them relatively quickly, like once every few seconds. Other than that, it was bad. It was not good single target.
Yeah, and I
now
mean...
Now it's real good.
And I mean, they burritos, like burritos aside and whatnot, it underscores, again, the differing perspectives that people see with combat. And... I don't know what the answer is, Tanis. Like, I don't. Maybe the answer is the best thing that we came up for you was the legacy combat with Ancients in the Wen book. Maybe that's the best way to go for you. I don't know.
No, I mean, I like that the best. I mean, honestly, the tier 90 tank and the prayer, is it the prayer or the spell? I don't know. Whichever one.
Darkness, spell. Yeah.
Did not find it that. I didn't find it any more effective than Crypt Bloom and
it's not.
Animate Dead.
Oh, no.
Like, that was better for me.
Yeah,
it gives.
Crypt Bloom will always be comfy.
Similar to those. Yeah, if you're wearing. If you're fighting something that's going to hit you really hard, it's going to. Like, approach that same level of damage mitigation. But if you're fighting stuff that's going to hit you for multiple smaller damage ticks, Animate Dead and Crypt Bloom is going to outpace it by a good wide margin. That, I mean, that combo, I said it on release, I kind of do still believe it's too powerful, but I don't believe that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, there are trade-offs for wearing that gear that you would do better damage in other things, but by golly, does it make you. It make a lot of the game very accessible, and I think that's an important thing to have around.
Right, and you know, I think we had you set up in Crypt Bloom, and the and the ancient blood spells and the Wenbook Tanis, and you were, mm-hmm. you went and you actually did those grove creatures as David recommended, and it was fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have any problems. Like, I didn't... Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing I would have gotten hairy would have been, like, the, you know, Slayer mini-bosses. Everything else, now, that was fine.
When you're doing necromancy stuff, Tanis, do you keep your ghost up at all times? Do you have it on your bar?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because yep. That's the other thing. It's like, that is the... That kind of makes up for the animate dead mitigation a little bit, if you're only getting hit by, like, one or two targets. And then the, like, darkness kind of makes up for the crit bloom mitigation. But the ghost is really important.
Yeah, no, the ghost is nice. And then, of course, you know, anytime I can still split, I'll run that.
Mm-hmm. But, no, I mean...
It's like a...
it says something that I know quite a few people who are using two or three piece crypt bloom with necromancy. I think that like that's like they'll put on the helm and gloves to get the crypt bloom two piece bonus, since they'll sack their accuracy, which as a reminder for necromancy is just straight up sack and damage.
That's what I should do.
A lot of places.
That's yeah, what there's I should a lot do. Of...
No, I don't want to put this out into the world. It makes me sad that it's a thing, but like.
And I was having survivability issues at hard mode Karapak.
Yeah. That's specifically where I think a lot of people were using it. But again, I'm of two minds where I'm like, I love Crypt Bloom for the accessibility. The fact that you can just wear two pieces of it on any style and sack the accuracy and have that much mitigation, I still think it's too strong. But again,
I bet that'll be a topic for another day. Another day on the Combat Council.
I'm like, I'm so torn on this. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Anyways. I'm gonna thank some Patreon supporters because they're currently voting on what our next monthly bid is going to be. There's two choices going forward: Lord Digger's deep dive into the elves, or a look into how guilds work in RuneScape and whether it's time to revive that promise for the skilling side. But this week I want to thank Alfie S, Alvaro L, Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Jewel Burra, Chunk the Monk, Dominic R, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling01, Maniac RS, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Rippeth, Runestar, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Seth W, Shirtpants, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, and Zant. Big, big, huge thank you goes out to all of these people for allowing us to do what we do here, and you can learn more about the Patreon offerings at patreon.com/RSBNB there. For as little as a dollar a month, you gain access to at least 60 now monthly bits, bonus shows, which are just extra episodes that we do about a singular topic each and every month. Yeah, deep dive into the topic. And like I mentioned, this month could be a discussion on the elves and their lore, or it could be a discussion on guilds and how RuneScape 3 used to have them. And, you know, maybe it's time for some more. So we'll discuss that. One of those topics. And you get access to all of that for as little as a dollar a month. We also have a VIP tier for $3 a month where you get a special chat rank in Discord, access to a chat channel, high quality stereo versions of the show, and of course a shout out on the first episode of each month. And we have our insider tier for $5 a month where you receive a shout out on the podcast each and every week, and you gain exclusive access to the outtakes we used to build the clip show at the end of the year. And these folks also get the annual RSPNB update Christmas card. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RSPNB. And of course, a big, big, huge thank you goes out to all of our supporters. It means the world to us that you let us do this. Thanks.
Yeah. Good shout out on Clan Citadels, though. I completely forgot those existed. That's a buff I probably ought to have.
Where did you hear Clan Citadels?
Oh, you were talking about guilds and skilling.
No, I meant like the combat guild, the warriors guild, the farming guild, the range guild, the cooking guild.
Also, you know what? Also a great... Those probably also need a revival. the thought about where they fit in the current game.
That's also a great discussion.
I heard clans too. I thought clans this whole time.
God, some people might think we're going to be discussing.
You said guild.
But I totally took it as clans.
My brain went straight to Citadel. I was like, oh yeah, I really ought to go. That's going to be good.
I should have put that on the list, Dad. It's okay. There was a more in-depth explanation mentioning the Farming Guild and the Warriors Guild on the post, so people know what we're talking about in terms of the voting. So there won't be any confusion
there.
That's
probably a better discussion. That's good. That's good. All right. Cool.
So I wanted to, I wanted to talk about this before, and it didn't get mentioned in the notes, but let's just break down the tank armor versus power armor difference, because we really didn't talk about that on launch week, but it's an important distinction where Necromancy has landed, in particular the tier 70 plus Death Warden armor and the tier 70 plus Death Dealer armor, because they each have a unique special effect to them. And Thaxi, you're in the camp of feeling like the Death Warden is actually more powerful and beneficial than the Death Dealer set.
Mm. I'm going to say they both have their place.
Yeah.
If you're doing group content, please, for the love of God and all that is holy, unless you are tanking, please be in power armor. Because otherwise, like, if you're not getting actively hit by a bunch of stuff, you're not tanking. You don't need to be tanky. You need to be doing damage. So, like, the way that the scales were before, right, they made two sets of armor and they said, all right, on the one set, and please, please don't quote me on the exact numbers. Somebody knows these better than I do, and I apologize. They're not off the top of my head. Damage armor is going to do 10 to 20%-ish more damage than you'd expect otherwise at the cost of 5 armor tiers. The tank armor is going to have those extra 5 armor tiers worth of, like, armor value, typically. Depends on the style, but typically. And it's going to have, once you hit level 70 for most styles, most armors, you're going to have a health bonus attached to it. The health bonus obviously makes you more tanky, and it comes with some extra damage mitigation in PvE that we don't normally talk about, but it's there. So tank armor, like, the thing is, in RuneScape, the way that the game is balanced, we deal oftentimes much more than 10 times the damage we receive, which says that a 10% like, the damage side of things, the damage we output is so much bigger than the damage we have to tank, effectively, that buffing our output a little bit is generally more effective than buffing the damage that's incoming. So while it may have been a choice of, like, 10 to 20% extra damage versus 10 to 20% extra tankiness, the damage side won really, really, really hard on those scales for a long time. If you were trying to be sweaty about your setup, right? Obviously, being more tanky, there's a time and place for it, and it was used. And obviously they've upped that 10 to 20% tankiness incredibly with things like Crypt Bloom and like Darkness, right? To, like, add these extra effects, or like the Octo Armor set, where you get a little bit of tankiness and a little bit of extra damage put in. With that said, what they did with the Necromancy armors is they said, nah, screw that, we're going to give a passive 10% chance to not get hit, so just straight up extra 10% damage mitigation, and we're not just going to give you, like, 10 to 20% extra health, we're going to give you, like, 50% extra health. Like, they chunked into that side of the scales, and the armor, especially, like we're saying, with the ghost up, with the darkness invocation up, like, or incantation, you get so tanky, so incredibly tanky. You can do a lot of things that, like, that 10 to 20% extra damage from power armor, sure, but, like, if wearing the tank armor allows you to use an aggression potion at a really high damage monster for, like, Slayer, your Slayer has become more efficient in the tank armor. And now there's, again, with before Necromancy for the other styles, it's a pretty cut and dry, you probably want to be doing this thing, right? And part of that is because they're solved, and part of it because mathematically that thing is just way better. In Necromancy, they did a much better job of, in my opinion, of balancing to say, hey, you've got a choice to make here. And it might make more sense to do either of these things situationally.
Yeah.
And that's what they did with the armor, in my opinion. And I think it's really smart, and I think it's worked out really well. And I would love to see that translated to the other styles as well. That's the other big, we're talking about systemic changes in the crits and accuracy and stuff. That's the thing that with this is, like, that tankiness on the tank armor is not to be discounted.
And that's the interesting thing about this is that I was at level 60 with the tank armor. I was like, holy cow, this is really upping my life points more than even, you know, tier 80 plus tank armor does with any of the other styles. Plus, you got this dodge chance associated with it. And it makes it really comfortable. And like we were just talking about in the previous segment before with this, it's not Animate Dead Crypt Bloom levels. But it's still it's a different way of making yourself tanky, is what I'll say.
I mean, Animate Dead is effective at frequent low damage hits because it reduces them by a lot. But against big damage hits, it doesn't do as much. Darkness will mitigate a big hit and a small hit the same amount. It's just a flat 30% less damage taken. So against something that's going to hit you really hard, like a very high level Slayer monsters or a lot of bosses. Given a lot of bosses have 100% accuracy, and that kind of makes darkness useful, they do still need to make that systems change. But outside of those places, like, darkness can outweigh it to some degree.
And isn't this also our first dodge mechanic in game? For the character, at least? Yeah.
Yes, they added more RNG. They took away RNG on our hit chance, and they added RNG on the enemy hit chance. I mean, we've always had RNG as a hit chance element, right? To be clear, like, enemies could always miss you, but this is a second check. You've got to roll the hit and then you roll the hit twice, so to speak.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Death Dealer gives you the execution chance, 2%
which is nice, not have to think about it.
Peace Warden to, apply Death Mark, and you don't need to, cast it. You can still cast it if for some reason you fail to do that over a fight, but hey.
It saves you GCD.
Yeah,
it keeps in good. Terms of the power armor. You can do damage. It's passive damage output.
And this is something they can iterate on, I think, for other styles quite easily. And one of the things that they could just bring in is, hey, just add more distinctions between tank and power armor, and do set effects again, because these are quite honestly just set effects that they brought in with these the death mark chance and the dodge chance for the tank side. And I remember some discussion a long time ago, people were saying, just go and add set effects to items, and they weren't sure if they were going to do that, but here we are now.
Well, and it's something to do with, does in some situations it could encourage Switchscape to some degree. Not this one, though, right? Because they're passive, the way that these apply. But it's the thing of, would you rather have a weapon that has a passive effect on it, or a weapon that has a special attack on it, or both?
Right, and that's factoring into the diversity of it again and letting people choose. So, right. I think that's a net positive at the end of the day.
Oh yeah, the armors. I love the change they made to it.
Yeah,
and I do hope that it's something that they kind of build into the other styles.
Yeah, and then. With that, you're going to need to use that armor somewhere. And this is where we really started experimenting and, getting in the trenches with necromancy about how it's being used in terms of our combat, whether it be Slayer or PVM. And what we learned right away is that it's actually a game of resource management that facilitates lower APM.
As soon as they released the abilities, right, I mean, before the skill was even out, we had that conversation on the show that this looks like it's going to be we've got like six types of stacks and you're going to have to manage them to be fully effective with it. And how much you choose to put into that is how much you're going to get out of it. With, you can do a little bit of manipulation of revolution, but for the most part, that's how it goes.
Tannis, how is the resource management side of it? For you, because I know that this was something that kind of threw you when I mentioned that to you after reading the abilities.
It all goes back to you can get by and you can use this and largely not worry too much, but if you want to go to the next level, if you want to be able to do the higher end stuff, you have to be able to manage those stacks, and that's a bridge too far for me to be able to do.
Right. And, once again, that leans on what is possible within the RuneScape combat system. because it's not, you know, and as much as some of us would like it to be, it's not a game that has a very fast tick rate for it. You're still limited, of course, to the grid by grid movement and the point and click with that. And that all factors in to the resource management, making it not exactly as smooth or as clean as it could be in other games. So I see how that compounds things for you on that. But, I mean, I'm trying to think. We really didn't have much in the way of resource management in game before. Just, you know, generate adrenaline. And when you, you know, hit threshold level, let it go.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some, if you wanted to be sweaty with other styles, there were some things, right? Like, you could resource manage your cooldowns for, like, dots for melee. You could resource manage your, like, stacks for something like the bow of the Last Guardian, right? Like, there are some things where you could, like, micromanaging a specific item, micromanaging, like, when you're casting crits and using things, but it was a lot of adrenaline management. That was the biggest piece.
Yeah.
For sure.
And this actually isn't so much adrenaline management in terms of just managing these stacks, and that, you know, controls, for example, when you Finger of Death, the amount of Necrosis stacks you have determines how much adrenaline you use. So in some ways, by managing your Necrosis better, you're using less adrenaline with this, which is an interesting idea in itself.
Yeah, I mean, Finger of Death is an awful ability based on its cost, at full cost. And so,
and we've all been in the situation where you've had, you know, 80% adrenaline, and you accidentally fire it off with no Necrosis stacks.
Right. Well, like, the majority of the time, a Necrosis stack is just straight up 10% adrenaline. There are occasional times when you just want to hit cap with your tier 70 spec, and that's fine. But by and large, Necrosis is just, every stack of Necrosis is just 10% basically air quotes adrenaline to make this otherwise kind of crappy ability that hits like a truck be worth the cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of resource management, I guess you could say time is also another one of those, because that's where the conjures come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you mentioned with the skeleton, the longer the skeleton is up, the more damage it does. Hence why, you know, not letting it die is important, and using that life transfer in some bosses.
And the rope effect that adds the time to it. Too.
The witch, sorry?
The tier 95 armors, each one of the set effects is that it, per piece worn, you get 5% extra duration on your conjure.
Yeah,
or 7%, one of those two.
I gotta get that at some point, because that's also adding fun stuff to making things easier on that. Okay. Okay. We're spending money this weekend, folks.
We're all time, Shane. Weekend, you got folks. It. You got it to burn.
Yeah, I burnt actually quite a bit on Necromancy, but that's okay, amongst other things. Talk about that after. I guess we can. About
you still got all that farming money.
Yeah, farming's great money these days. Anyways.
I did one farm run, one in the last like month, and I see Shane Art during that farm run. My man is out there
providing
herbs to the economy.
And here I thought you were getting into it or something. This was a regular thing now for you.
No, I did it once. Yep, I had a weekly Hero Pass task to harvest 200 things, and by golly, did I! And then I replanted them, and then I left. Those herbs have been planted since March.
Wow. Anyways, conjures don't do all the work, as we know. And Tanis, I know when Necromancy was first announced, you were hoping that conjures would provide a significant amount of your damage, north of 50%. But I don't know where it actually lands. I've never actually DPM tested this. It feels like it's probably around the 30 to 35% range, if I had to guess.
Depending on which conjures you're using. I will say, I think one of the things that has not maybe been emphasized super heavily to people that's kind of flying under the radar is the ghost. That ghost, when you have it active, and the active is expensive, but if you can activate that ghost, that thing increases your damage by a lot.
Yeah, and that's actually something else really neat with all the conjures, and I don't think we appreciated this when it was first announced, but they all had a secondary action when they yeah. launched. Of course, the skeleton goes into berserk mode, the zombie explodes in AoE, but Command Vengeful Ghost haunts your enemies, and with this, on haunt, each enemy will take 2x damage from all attacks, capped at 35% bonus damage. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's a, like, 2x capped at 35%. There's something missing there. But either way, it's like every time you hit the target with a non-summon damage hit, so all of your purple damage hits, all of them, you basically just get 1,000 extra damage.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit the target a lot with their Commancy. It adds a lot of bonus damage. Like, it adds a lot of bonus, like, especially if you're using, like, a Soul Barrage and you've got, you know, 3+ stacks of stoles and you're, like, you're hitting the target 3x.
So that leans then into the whole, easy to learn but difficult to master thing then.
I think one thing we're seeing is everything is leaning into that.
I mean, like, it really was designed. Like, in this case, just keep the ghost active. Ghost active strong. Well, it's got a really complicated tooltip.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, like, that heals
Keep it activated. Yeah. Summoning it just heals you, but actually activating it is a massive damage boost against whatever you're attacking. Like, I would much rather spend the adrenaline on that than, like, it's going to do as much or more. Like, if you can get it off early in the ghost's life cycle and you can, like, life transfer, it'll do way more damage than, like, even a Death Skulls or something would. Like, it's a lot of damage. Considering it's, like, a full minute where every time you hit the target, you do 1,000 extra damage. Like, that adds up. That adds up real fast.
And it's like, okay, we're starting to see the way Necromancy synergizes with everything here. And
right.
It paints a picture about why, I think, and as much as we'd like it to be, you know, just the pet damage style, that's kind of fine on its own, maybe a little bit boring. But what you see with this is that it paints a picture of how the conjures enhance and add flavor to the necromancy combat, because, dare I say it, and we'll get back to this saying later, without the conjures and their command abilities, necromancy would probably just be venturing just a teeny tiny little bit closer to purple magic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that they are the biggest thing that set it apart. I mean, that, yeah. And again, like, it's got these systems changes that are, like, the accuracy and the crit damage and stuff, but that's just, like, those are passive things that just happen. Like, in terms of the actual feel of what the player is putting into it, it's got different adrenaline costs. And that's the only thing that would make it different from magic. It's different adrenaline costs, and you've got the conjures.
Yeah.
A separate set of abilities.
And you actually also pointed this out to me earlier today regarding Cease, and that those actually control the conjures, too.
Yeah, so big shout out to, like, if you're ever at a boss where you need to pull damage off it, like you're at Viraco and you want to stall HP before one of the timed phases, or if you're at Yakumaru and you need to wait while the poison flies out of the pool, for most of the reflect mechanics in the game, like Virago's reflect mechanic or Raxor's, I think conjure damage does not cause reflect onto the player. But if you wanted to be just extra safe, Cease will cause your necromancy conjures to allow you to leave combat. It will cause them to not attack until you re-select a target.
And that's actually
one of those, like, everybody forgets the ability exists.
Yeah, so. And you know, I can now that you mentioned Yakumaru with that, I can actually see why you would want that. So,
yeah, I mean, I've been using it with my dummy testing a lot with these, like, just going through rotations. Where after I'm done attacking the dummy, I can either wait like the 40 seconds for my conjures to despawn, or I can hit Cease and actually leave combat that way.
Right,
because otherwise I'm just stuck in combat until the. Or I have to pull my lantern off, right? It prevents you from having to pull your lantern off to desummon your conjures.
Yeah, I've done. So. I carry the Excalibur,
and I just click it. Yeah.
No, and I've accidentally clicked the Excalibur before and desummoned in combat.
That's real bad. That's a teleport out moment.
Yes,
for me,
it is.
For, like,
it
a
is.
Lot of things. Like, yes. That's a yikes. But, yeah. Menu entry swapper one.
And people are probably wondering now with this, well, we've talked about conjures, we've talked about resource management and APM, how exactly are we using necromancy in-game, and what do some of the rotations look like for this? And we're going to go through some of those right now. And I feel like we should also just give people an update on the action bar micro lesson, because we promised we were going to do that, but we're still waiting for a couple things on that.
I mean, they said that they were thinking about adjusting the cost of conjures.
Yep.
They said they're thinking about adjusting the costs of, like, some of the other abilities. And then there's the, like, the shadow hanging over it of, like, is there going to be a nerf? Because I can think of I'll be honest, like, spoilers, I do kind of think maybe the style is a little more powerful, and I can think of literally a half dozen ways to, like, tone it down without killing the, you know, there's a lot of ways they could go, and we don't know what, if or what they would do about it. So there's a world where we're just like, I want the necromancy updates to like calm down, or for a lot of the stuff that they said is coming down the pipeline eventually, I want that to all be out.
Yeah.
But during, we'll talk for this section, we'll talk through what we're using right now. Shane's been doing more of the, like, I want to say more of the hardcore endgame kind of stuff than I have. You've been really grinding the Rassiol and like using a lot of very hard full manual, like very specific rotation-y stuff. I've been doing a lot of Slayer. I've been doing a lot of low tier bossing. The highest tier thing I think I've done is I did an Archglacier streak up to 500%.
Raids is up there.
I got relatively sweaty. I do a raid every day. I do at least one raid every day too. Yes.
Yeah.
And so
that factors into it too.
I mean, a lot of that is like you can't use a set rotation for raids because the team's always going to be different. So that's a little bit of a like, do it on the fly and use what you have off cooldown and what you have, you know, resources to use when it's appropriate. Hold the image when you need to. But
yeah, fair enough.
In terms of hard set rotation, Shane has definitely been, you've been doing a lot more of that than I have.
Yeah, and this is one of the core rotations that you see at the end game with necromancy in general, and that's what's called the living death rotation, because it utilizes, of course, the living death combat ability, which it's important to realize how powerful this can be, in that it makes your basic attacks generate 2 more necrosis stacks per use, touch of death generates more adrenaline, finger of death deals 50% more damage, and death skulls, most importantly in the case of the Rassiol fight, has its cooldown reduced to 12 seconds. And with this, the way you build this together, it's actually a really simple, and this is where we said you're going to be looking at a really simple revolution action bar.
Yeah.
It's your skeleton plus your basics.
Let's be honest. Look at the ability book. The living death, it's got a purple icon. You look for every other purple icon in that ability book. There's 4 of them. It's basic and the 3 abilities you just mentioned. If it's purple, living death does good things with it. If it's not purple and you got living death up, don't use it.
Exactly. And, you know, just to give an example of how this would go in terms of activating living death at Rassiol, it looks something like immediately after that, you'll use a touch of death, go into your death skulls, touch death again, continue cycling basics until death skulls is ready, let death skulls go again, fire off the 2 fingers of death that you built up with the 12 necrosis stacks, continue to cycle basics, and if you have enough time, work another death skulls into that. And that's the death skulls rotation for pretty much any form of high-end PVM necromancy that you're going to see, specifically Rassiol in this case. And in general, it really, I want to say, relies on the interaction of death skulls with this. And there was, of course, some question a few weeks back about how much this was going to be impacted in terms of the changes that happened to the death skull's ability, the rewrite that happened to it.
Right.
And, you know, they did tone the damage down a bit. I think it was, you know, in the you know, probably 10 to 12% range that we saw a drop in terms of death skull's damage with this, but still, nonetheless, this is a very powerful rotation, providing you have the necromancy Zuck Cape. And the thing I want to underscore with this is that when you're doing this, in addition to, of course, using things like Touch of Death, Death Skulls, and Finger of Death while Living Death is active, there's going to be times in there where you're going to say, well, this is happening right now, but maybe I want to actually just fire off one of, you know, the Necromancy basic attacks instead. Maybe I want to Touch of Death instead. So that's what this has been.
Building up souls.
Or Soul Barrage too. And this is what this has been moving me towards, is slowly even just adding in more manual basics. And that was never something I thought I would see myself do in PVM, yet here we are.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Necromancy has enabled on this side. And if that's something that was designed that way through the, you know, the onboarding and the path with that, that can go back to what we were talking about easy to learn, difficult to master. It probably did accomplish that.
So. Well, and you have to remember, too, that like that rotation itself, you just do all the purple things, and you hit Death Skulls whenever you can, is simple enough, but you also have to worry about the lead-up to it, right? You don't actually gain all that much damage from this if, for example, all of your conjures run out in the first 10 seconds of your rotation, because then you have to spend time and adrenaline resummoning them. Because they are important. Or like, leading into this, you should try to have bloat up, you should try to have your conjures up, and then you build to adrenaline and you do this, right? Like, you have to... Like, it requires more planning than just executing the rotation, is you actually have to, like, build into it.
It's a foreplay.
Yeah! You know,
you can't just go right into it like that. You gotta loosen it up a little bit, they say. But I did it first.
Like... If you want to do good damage, that's it. That's the thing.
And
with that said, go for it.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just face popping right now. We got to bring video back at some point.
I mean, with that said, the like living death does require a lot of like planning. And again, if you're not using those purple abilities, it's not a good use of 100% adrenaline necessarily. So like for the Revolution Andes out there, I'm waving. Can't tell because no video. Like, if I want to do a living death rotation, I actually built a second bar that, like, I just keybound, like, shift Z, shift X, whatever it is, to shift my bar back and forth. If I want to do a living death, I just built a bar that, like, doesn't have soul sap on it and, like, you know, stuff like that, so I can continue to revolution in my living death because I am so lazy.
Yeah, and see, that's the point of what we were also talking about, is you need different action bars for different activities.
Yeah, you can keep on swapping back and forth between them. Again, it's like, but with that said, when I'm doing like casual revolution, if I'm not trying to like min-max a boss, I almost never use Living Death. Like, I'll be honest with you.
I mean, things probably die too quickly for that, and you're better off saving the adrenaline for other stuff along the way.
Yeah, or by the time you have it up and you've got all the prep work done and you're ready to cast it, like at raids, for example, boss is 1,000,000 health. With 10 people, you need to do 100k. Like, congratulations, you just are going to have to stand there and wait with your living death on. So it's not, you know, there's a time and place, but it's a little harder to do the setup for it versus something like a swiftness that you can just drop and then you're good, you know?
So what is your casual rotation looking like right now?
So what I think has kind of ended out being, as a lot of what you're saying with like what you're using for your river rotation, is the backbone of any regular, like any more relaxed river rotation too. It's that skeleton and then Touch of Death to build necrosis stacks, and then soul sap to build soul stacks, and then after that, it's entirely dealer's choice. And this is where the situational nature of things comes in, right? At different times, I will add either the Death Skulls, my Ghost, Finger of Death, or Soul Strike or Soul Barrage to that basic framework, right? The biggest thing for me is that if I want to do this, like you need to build your resources and you need to spend your resources. So with that rotation, you pick one adrenaline spender for necromancy. That's going to be either your ghost for your heals and the extra damage, because again, it'll activate the like conjure ability on it, It'll be the skulls if you've got the Zuck cape only, and if you need like AoE, that's when you'd put those on. Or you, if you don't need heals and you don't, and you just need to like hit one target real hard, you just want to have some nice single target, you can actually just put single Finger of Death on there, and that is definitely the most AFK bar. In terms of like just putting out damage and not worrying about it, if you can just soul split somewhere, you just use Skeleton, Touch of Death, Finger of Death, Soul Sap, and then if you want to afterwards at the end, you either put Soul Strike or Soul Barrage. And again, it's a matter of what you need, right? Soul Strike is an AoE and it stuns, and Soul Barrage is that big single target burst damage. Now that's like the pick your own adventure for the kind of like more relaxed side of it. If you want to, my recommendations for increasing your damage from there, the next steps for building up into other things is considering using Manual for your Soul Barrage and using Soul Barrage with Threads of Fate to spend your adrenaline on like doing a nice big, because that turns that Soul Barrage into an AoE, so it's just going to be better than a Soul Strike in every case. Also, if you're not doing that super elect bar, if you have the Ghost on, and you can put the Ghost and Skulls on at the same time, you'll have some lower uptime on the Ghost, so be a little careful. But you, like, if you don't have Finger of Death on your bar, just hit it one while. Like, honestly, don't worry about trying to track your stacks. Just like, oh, I'm at full adrenaline, I haven't hit Finger in a while, I'm just going to press a key bind and hope I have stacks. Like, 9 times out of 10, that's honestly just fine. Until they add some visual clarity to the ability and the stacks. And then same thing, if you're on a bigger target, hitting Bloat once in a while, Bloat hits pretty good damage. And same thing if you're on like smaller targets. If you're killing small things really fast, Bloat, when a target dies while it's active, it spreads to 9 other targets in the area. And it doesn't aggro, it just does passive damage to them. So you can burn down, if you're doing like Slayer or something, Bloat is still worth using, even if you've got a target that's got some smaller health bar. Just once in a while, like twice a minute maybe, just hit your Bloat. So on a Revolution bar, what that looks like is that if you need AoE, you put Death Skulls first, then your Skeleton. Skeleton will always be there. After that, if you need heals, you put the Ghost. Ghost and Death Skulls can survive together just fine, you have enough adrenaline for it. Then Touch of Death. And then if you don't need Death Skulls or Ghost, that's where you'd put Finger. Then you put Soul Sap. And then if you don't want to worry about being manual, you add Soul Strike or Soul Barrage at the end. That's your rotation. That's the, like, you add in what you need, starting from that framework of Skeleton, Touch of Death, Soul Sap. That makes sense.
And you know, that's what we said on launch week. That's simpler than we thought it would be, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can do really, like, honestly, with just, like, Skeleton, Ghost, Touch of Death, Soul Sap, and never spending your stacks at all. You can just sit at full Necrosis and sit at full Souls. You'll do fine damage like that. Like, if you just need to go, if you're looking for your Zuck Cape, honestly, just that, 4 abilities, you're fine. You don't need anything fancy, you stand in the safe spot. We have put out, you know, Finder Zuck episodes where we talk through those safe spots. Find guides on it. There exist out there. I think we nibbled it. That 4 abilities, just go. You click, and you just don't click the monster, so wait for them to die.
And
they'll die. You'll survive.
At this point, I say this is what I like about necromancy, is that there's the depth to it, but there's also this simplicity. Because to make the same sort of thing for AoE, what are we talking about? Maybe working in Threads of Fate into this?
Mm-hmm.
Scythe?
There is a... We're going to call this a little bit dark tech, because I've not done a lot of practice on it, but there is a rotation where you literally have a bar that is just like Skulls, Scythe, Soulstrike. You don't worry about Touch of Death, you don't Finger of Death, you just like, I build adrenaline with basic attacks and Soul Sap, and I spend adrenaline with Skulls, Scythe, and Soulstrike. And that's the rotation. You just trust your... Soul Split to keep you alive. You don't like worry about, you don't even have to worry about summons necessarily, because Scythe is such good AoE damage. Like, if you really want to kill a lot of small targets, you're just aggro potting something. I have not done a lot of testing with that rotation, so like, take with a grain of salt that is something that will need to be worked out. But you absolutely can't do like weird revo bars with this, where Scythe is just your big adrenaline spender, and that's your AoE, and you're good.
And like I said with the previous one, again, this is selling why I like necromancy. And
yeah.
I don't know, Tanis, if this helps at all, or if it kind of clarifies things about where I'm coming from. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel the same going in as coming out as I did going in, right? I think it's a fine skill. I had a lot of fun with it. Now that everything is all said and done, you know, I see myself using magic and or necromancy, right? Like before it was melee or magic, right? So, I mean, I like it. This didn't really fundamentally change anything for me.
Yeah, and it's interesting pulling back the covers on that to see what necromancy exposes within the existing combat styles, right? Because, like you said, for you, it's displace melee. Maxi, has this... I mean, it would be unfair to ask you if this would displace range. I don't know if it did.
I mean, range is my comfort blanket, you know? I don't have to think when I... Like, I've done range for so many years. Like, range, I can just put on the armor and... And the bars swap themselves, and I just show up, and things die.
It's that consistent rotation.
I really enjoy this, and I have enjoyed training it. And you know, again, like there are other aspects to the skill, like rituals and things that have honestly gotten a lot of my XP. So I still like feel like I've got. I don't know. I'm not at all burnt out on it yet. How about that?
Yeah.
Is it like same. I still enjoy it? I would necromancy things before I would use magic at them personally, because, and to some degree melee, because I'm not as confident on those high-end rotations. I don't have as much experience on them. And this feels like something that I have spent a lot of time thinking about and, you know, practicing to some degree more recently. So currently I would pick up necromancy before the other two styles, probably.
Yeah, and, you know, I bought magic power armor before necromancy came out with the idea, yeah, I'm going to learn magic before necromancy comes out. I never did, and I haven't put that magic armor on since necromancy arrived.
It's there for if you ever need it. It's still good at a lot of places.
Well, I mean, it makes sense for me because it's an easy...
But yours is crit blue, and that's a different case entirely.
Is it? Okay, well...
I think so.
I mean... But like, I only have to worry about adrenaline. I know how to set my bar up so that it's going to, you know, sunshine, and then maybe come around again for a tsunami. You know, like
the only thing that you really can't do is the detonation in your rotation, because that requires probably a little bit more input. But like, aside from that, yeah, that's true.
And this is what we've seen in terms of the other styles in general, is that people at the high end in particular have just dropped them except for a few certain cases, like high-end Zamorak, I believe. And
well, I think part of that, too, is like people at the very highest end are doing it because it's fun. People at the middle end are doing it because their damage went up with it. That doesn't mean that the other styles can't do more damage. They just require so much more input.
Exactly. And it's a question of, you know, do you want to do that input or do you not want to do that input, right?
Like, I don't know what to do with my inventory when I'm doing necromancy. Like, one, I have the ghost, so I don't need food. And two, I don't have switches, so I have so much food. Like, maybe a first world endgame problem, but like...
For now...
My inventory is so empty. If I looked at somebody, like, going to a raid, for example, I would, and, like, I'm sorry about this, I would low-key judge somebody if they had an inventory with 20-plus fish in it. I'm sitting here with inventory, like, 16 fish, and I'm like, what? Like, even with, like, a couple extra room pouches and other things, like, I just don't have stuff to put in there, and I leave these bosses with full inventory of food because of the ghost. You know? Because there's no switches. They simplified it. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's the necromancy life, because it raises some interesting questions about the other styles. And, you know, there's multiple ways of looking at this. Well, RuneScape bad, that's interesting you mentioned that.
Switchscape bad. I am very happy to have extra inventory space for food I don't need.
Okay, gotcha.
It's very weird to have food I don't need.
Gotcha, glad we clarified that. So you look at the other styles. You can bring those up in a way to match necromancy. I know Mod Ryan's looking at doing a combat beta with the 30k max hits and some of the other necromancy changes to them.
That would be cool. Adding the crit change, adding the accuracy change, and increasing the hit cap to 30. Like, I forgot about that. That too. Like, that's those three things would go a long way to doing good things for the other styles. They would probably, I mean, again, that is, we've done a lot of power creep in this game. That is a hefty power creep. But,
not so much as big as Necromancy, right? In terms of power creep. Like, to the point where, I can casually max hit 30k now. I couldn't do that before.
I had to work
to hit the 12k before.
If you look at the record sheet, if you look at, like, what people are capable of doing, like, my records and your records at a lot of random bosses are going up with Necromancy. But the ceiling, the power creep, there was not. Like, the power creep was for the average player. There was not power creep of what the people are capable of doing in the game. Like, you could do some crazy nonsense with burst rotations with range to, like, get fast kills. You could do some crazy stuff with, like, magic doing, like, stacking crit bonuses and crit stick and stuff. Like, the actual, like, if you were sweaty as heck and you were style switching and using the combat system to its most before, Necromancy isn't pushing the envelope for you. It's making it easier.
And that's precisely, David was not able to be here tonight because he was traveling, but that's exactly what he said. Is that he can do what he used to do at Solak and Virago with way fewer inputs now.
That, to me, is, like, more accessibility creep than power creep. Like, they've made it easier to hit those numbers, but the numbers haven't, to me, gotten that much. Like, you know, at the end of the day, for the end of the true end game, the numbers haven't gotten that much bigger. Like, that's the thing that I think a lot of people are missing about, oh my gosh, Necromancy is so strong. Meh, it's so strong for you. And that's good. Like, you get to hit big numbers and Serotonin Gobert, but like...
But it's made it accessible for so many other people as well.
Yeah, I'd be careful on that overreaction. Yeah. That's my question
with this. I see three ways they go with this. One, they bring other styles up to match. Sure. Two, they make things more difficult by adding more HP, which I don't think they would do. Or three, they see that Necromancy is overperforming and they bring it down a bit.
I think that there is, and I know this is more work, but I think that there's a nice happy medium where you do some of all of those things.
Right.
Maybe there's a couple necromancy abilities
that
are probably overperforming. Maybe there's some stuff you do to the other styles that makes them more enjoyable, right? Like, give the kiddos new toys. Maybe, like, be a little careful with the stuff you just introduced. And then, like, adjust bosses as needed? Like, adjusting boss health feels bad, because then everybody's like, oh, I should have farmed it before the buff. We don't love that. That doesn't promote fun gameplay, I think.
I would be really careful of.
Yeah. I think that, like, things don't have to be the way that they were. Like, you don't have to have, you know, kill times at a boss that are a set length to make it valid. I would say maybe, like, it's rough because there are a lot of bosses where mechanics just don't exist anymore. Honestly, even Hermod, like, he has two mechanics. I see one of them.
Right.
Sometimes.
But for somebody just learning, like, they're going to see both mechanics.
Yes. And that's it. That is part of the reward for getting good, so to speak. I don't think
there's
anybody in the game
overperforming then? I guess is the question.
I personally, and this I know is a hot a hot take. I would say no. I would say it's performing appropriately. But okay. That is... it. I mean, it is a big serotonin stick. Like, you hit big number, and I think big number good. But without, like, pushing the envelope of what is technically possible. And again, I could be wrong about that. Like, there might be somebody in a world record community who's looking at me now right now going, what the hell is this dude on? Things have gotten so much easier. But, like, I don't know.
Tanis, how do you feel in terms of, you know, just painting the entire picture, so to speak, of necromancy and where we're at? Is it overperforming?
I should
know what your answer is going to be from this based on how we started the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't feel like it is. Because if you couldn't do it before, you can't do it now. If you could do it before, it's easier to do it now.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that speaks to what necromancy was designed for and what we highlighted with the Killy tasks and building the armor, just getting more people into PVM, lowering that barrier. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, more people who can access content is a good thing, because you look at how many people were able to kill Zamorak last year upon release. Story mode, yes. You can go back and actually try it. That number goes down quite substantially. And same thing even with the Elder God War stuff. So, to get back to, you know, is necromancy overperforming here? Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your perspective. If it's making it easier for you to kill things and you weren't able to do PVM, you're going to say no. But if you're feeling that, well, I could already do this using magic arranged, you know, at Solak or Virago or wherever, except it's just going to, you know, allow me to do it with less inputs. Well, that's, you know, maybe something we need to be concerned about, because it's not going to be able to, in effect, be sustainable when it comes to looking at how this is at other bosses.
It is power creep. A lot for the average player. And that's, I mean, it's not for the end game, but it's power creep for the other player. And that, I think, is just, I think people enjoy that. I think there's something to be said about just enjoying pushing things and letting old content be easier. I think that's okay.
Yeah. And you know, we actually survey our audience from time to time. And when it comes to content surveys of what we've done, this is no surprise to us. One of the things people have asked for, and this was actually one of the most requested Patreon extra features, was, you know, hey, help us get into combat. Help us get into PVM somehow. And this was before we knew what necromancy was going to be. So, and, you know, granted, again, biases aside, that might just speak to the audience of the podcast, where I know the people who listen to this show represent a cross-section of average RuneScape players. And I use the term average in a way of, you know, just describing, I feel, what is a cross-section of people who have PVM skill, but nobody who is, you know, out there. I'm sure we do have people out there pushing the bleeding edge, otherwise we wouldn't have invited them into our community. But it's a good cross-section that brings everything together. And that's what I consistently hear, is that, you know, hey, we need more ways to get into PVM and combat. Tell us something about that. And necromancy lets
this
us do
that.
So,
I mean, the Killy tasks are a masterstroke. Only good things to say about those.
Yeah.
Even as much as I may not have enjoyed it at the time. On a few times, that's just kind of how, I don't know, that's kind of what makes PVM rewarding when you actually do get through it. So it was fun to be able to kind of have to do that.
Yeah,
I still remember my first Jod kill, my first Rax kill. Like, yeah, they weren't good kills, but.
But that leaves us one final dangling issue here with this. Is it okay?
One final dangle.
one final dangling issue. Is it okay that Magic Melee and Ranged are going to be put to the side for now in favor of Necromancy for most people based on this? Because I think that's what's going to happen.
Mm. Knee-jerk reaction, yes. New content, if people weren't using it, I'd have concerns. Knee-jerk reaction.
And, you know, we're 2 months in now at this point, right? Almost 2 months in. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for to see how it settles in once the hype dies down to see what kind of changes need to happen across the board to either Necromancy or the other styles.
I would be interested to see, because I'm not... I do see, actually. For raids, right? Because raids is a good cross-section. We get all kinds of folks who are just getting into it, who have been raiding for years, who are, you know, killing all kinds of endgame stuff and are just here to hunt for their last pet, to people who are probably too low level to reasonably be doing endgame PVM, but it's fine. And I would say about half of the people right now are using other styles, and about half, like every once in a while you get that raid where it's like 9 necro people, necromancers, but like there's a lot of rage where we get people who are usually there's like that one meleeer, right? And then you get a couple of rangers that are a couple of people with Bovless Guardian, a couple of people with Fasoa who are just like, I like this weapon, it make me go burr and it fun. And I don't know if that's them kind of going back to that or if they never left, really. And they just trained Necromancy through rituals and didn't interact. But I think...
Okay, so people haven't dropped it then like a hot potato then.
No, I think there's a lot of people who are still using it and enjoying it. Both the other styles and Necromancy. I think that that's a true statement for both. From what I've seen, looking at the cross-section of the population coming through raids... Is like there are, you know, I think there's part of me that is like the doomsayer with the Rolling Stone fallacy and the whole nine yards that like, you know, there's going to be like people are going to go into Necromancy and they're going to realize they like their other styles and they're going to try their other styles and it's not going to do the same thing as Necromancy and they're going to feel bad and they're going to quit. And maybe there's going to be some people doing that, but I think on the whole, I think it's doing good things. I think people still feel comfortable using their old styles. I think Necromancy is like there's people who will stand by it until their dying day and say this is my new thing because either I love it or I think it's really good. And I think that there is honestly a healthy balance of both in the community right now. And I think that
see that within, you know, the raid community and whatnot as one example.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, if you're in, on the other hand, if you're, you know, doing those AOD masses instead and you're just striving to, you know, push the damage as much as you can, Necromancy might be an option there for that. Or you could just be, one of the rotations and just do that.
People I know who are doing AOD right now are still like it's a lot of magic and like occasionally a Boalas Guardian for the chinner or something. There's people using Necromancy at it, but like that I think is honestly still experiencing because that's raids you kind of roll up to a point once you know how the mechs work. It's not all that, you know, it's mostly mechanical rather than damage numbers. AOD, you have to be pretty confident on your rotation a lot of the times, and it's mechanically a little more precise than raids. I think people are comfortable on their other styles and are still using them. It's what I've seen, at least.
All right, so the death of other styles is greatly exaggerated, then.
I don't think they're gone. I don't think they've been outripped. I think, you know, if you're good with those other styles, if you're really solid on your Bovlast Guardian rotation, you know, those kind of things, I think the other styles still work just fine. Obviously, they haven't been nerfed.
And I think they scared people, though. And I think the reason people are talking about it like this is they scared people because they said once Necromancy comes out, don't expect us to add anything new to the other styles for some time.
With that, they did also say, expect us to look at adding some necromancy changes to their styles eventually, and I think that hope anybody who's like, oh, this is the content drought. Oh, like, you mean, remember when Magic was the king and Range was like, what are you doing with a bow, you absolute troll? I, you know, maybe we go through a period where Necro is like that, and before they add those buffs, like, I think that the promise of potentially adding those system changes to the other styles might pull some people into Sting. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Hopeful.
And that brings us to our last point. Is Necromancy just purple magic?
And we've done this like 4 times on the show. No! They added in other things. They made it interesting.
Okay. Tanis?
It's different. I think it has its own identity. Like, it really does.
And then with that, we get to the transformative bit, and this is underscoring the entire purpose of Necromancy. New combat style, yes. It cannot change the core of what RuneScape combat is. Simple as that. You still got the tick system, you still got the action bar and the systems associated with it. It's just a different way of thinking about it and getting that damage out there on the field.
Yeah.
So. And, you know, time will tell. Time will tell what the first batch of Necromancy patches look like in terms of balancing, because there will be patches that bring things down, I bet. We've had, you know, changes that move laterally with the Death Skulls change and bring things up in the case of Bloat and the Scythe as other examples, but there will be other changes at some point in the future. We also have a boss coming in November that will probably drop something Necromancy related, so we'll be keeping an eye on that, of course, and what that's going to do to the situation and how that's going to enhance the skill. But overall, I feel like Necromancy is in a good spot, combat-wise. And, you know, that makes me feel good in that they, as we said, they hit the mark on delivering the skill from the training side, both in terms of combat and the rituals. And now that we've had, you know, almost 2 months to interact with it, we're seeing that Necromancy in practice, yeah, it's got its own unique playstyle and its own unique spot in RS alongside everything else, and that situates things. So that's good.
They made a combat style that is fun to play, and like I think meets the goals of living up to what the combat system could be. When they released DOC,
that's actually a really good way of putting it. What the combat system
I am pleased with those two things, and the balance of it will, I trust, come in time, regardless of how that's going to look or what it's going to be.
Yeah, and they got really good people working on that too, combat council-wise, people who actually play the game, unlike some of the other games out there that have people working on systems that don't play it. So, there you have it. Tanis, any closing thoughts?
You know, I think I've said everything that I really can say. You know, I like Necromancy. It's still something that I probably, you know, will use, you know. But yeah, didn't fundamentally change anything for me.
All right, fair enough. And with that, we get to do another thing we really like doing here on the podcast, and that's showcasing off Game Jam Weeks, because that happened last week. Mod Stew is in again with quest and lore related updates this time, updating the portal graphical effects for the Erebus portal in Extinction. Apparently before that they didn't get much time to work on that, so it was just a very simple asset, and now
it was a time rift. Yeah,
it actually looks really, really, really neat for people who are going to have the fortune of going through Extinction, and maybe the misfortune of spending a bit too much time in Erebus.
Oh, that crawl speed was brutal.
Oh, I've spent a lot of time in Erebus. A lot of time.
That's precisely what I was referring to. And an option will be added to the Sintistan Cathedral to replay 2021's weekly overhead god dialogue. And you get to choose which one. It's going to be just press and choose.
I mean, you can sit. That is like How much time was each of those? Were like 2 to 3 minutes long, right? At least, like
it
that
was
is
like,
they
it
basically
was like,
had an
yeah, it was
hour
like,
long movie of conversation.
Yeah, that's it was like 7 months of dialogue there added each week from June until
was
January.
It that much?
Yeah,
June.
Yeah, they started with the Carapac stuff, the Note on Front, and then it went all the way through the first week when Het's Oasis came out.
Like, the scroll bar on that wiki page is long, and you can sit there and just watch them have that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. Cool, cool update.
Also, further progress to the Less Quest Requirements project mentioned in the previous Game Jam summary, and he says, thanks to, gratefully to received graft from our outsourced QA team throughout Game Jam week, and over half of the 40-ish affected quests have completed testing, getting this project significantly closer to release. And this was, of course, the project that just basically cleaned up the quest requirements and just made them a little bit easier to follow and flow through.
Remove barriers that didn't need to be there.
Yeah, or just ones that didn't make sense anymore in this day and age, really.
Mm-hmm.
Mod Fowl is working on something called Spirit Stamp, which is an ability that will allow you to mark a tile and teleport back to it.
Yeah. With a 20... I mean, cool, but niche, I think. I think this might have a bunch of scaling application, because it's got a 15-tile range.
Yeah.
So something like using a... Like the... Summoning, I think, at like the Amulet Altar, if you're teleporting to the Ithil Bank... this, like, once every, you know, 3 times a minute, you can now teleport 15 tiles back closer. Like, if you want to get sweaty with your like, bank trips for some skills, I think this is kind of neat.
Yeah, I mean, just leave it to the skillers, they'll find a way to...
Yeah. Wondering if it would do any... If it would the, what is it, the egg sorting? The fletching?
Oh, maybe, but I think some of that is, like, how often... Because 15 tiles is a surge and a half, right? So, like, it's not actually all terribly far. And then you have to do your trip... Each trip has to be 20 seconds or less, because otherwise the mark will... Or I guess you could do it, like, on your way in... I think it's going to be niche based on the restrictions currently listed, but it's like it sounds especially like this is a skilling tool to me. This is not a combat tool for the most part, which is cool.
No. And
neat optimization for the folks who want to get sweaty with efficiency, and I think that's cool because those folks don't get a whole lot of updates.
Yeah, so the question is, you know, finding something skilling-wise where you do a less than 20-second trip and you can just pop the mark down and do it that way. So.
Also, teaser for what's going postal, a new quest, which, like, I am never mad for more post-DP, and I'm assuming that's going to be his involvement.
I think that's a placeholder.
Aww. Well, fair enough. Oh, placeholder, PH. Yep, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think that's going to change, probably. But
an associated quest narrative to go along with it.
Yes, of course.
By the way,
that would be a
whatever
fun
that
way,
be.
Fun thing to unlock.
Like Dive from Moya.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Mod Black Witch and Mod Alex continue with the Kandarin graphical refresh.
Oh my god. Like, what do they say? Mod Black Witch spent, like, 30 hours placing rocks. Just placing rocks. Something like that. And man, the skylines on this and the skyboxes, like, it looks all good.
Like,
shout out to the whole environment team.
Like, we're looking at, like, the area kind of like by the
Elven Overpass.
Yeah, and the Hunter minigame thing with the charm sprites there in one of them, but the other one, the mountain pass.
ZMI altar. But, like...
completely different.
They... Like, I was not, honestly, to be totally honest with you, I was, like, iffy when I first saw the graphical changes, because they removed a lot of, like, the grass and, like, the ground cover that added texture to things. But, like, these look so good. And it's a simpler and like more modern style, and I'm so excited to see this in game. I'm just so excited to just walk around Kandor.
And there's like a legitimate mountain range there now.
The skylines look so good on all of these.
Yeah, and I was asking Zant about this, and he said that, you know, this would actually just be new. They would actually do new geometry for this. It wouldn't be, you know, like a skybox or anything like this. So there is actually,
yeah,
it's not just like the retexturing and lighting work that places like Falador and Lumbridge got.
Like, look at all of the rocks along those ridges and edges and like the mountains they built. Like I did read, like, I think Mudblackwood, somebody said, spent 30 hours placing those rocks. Like, it's good job. Just good job. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this.
Let's see. Mod Blackwitch and Mod Alex have been updating the area of Kandorin for the last 2 whole months. And yeah, Obviously game jam related 2 whole months, so the past 2 game jams.
Mod Blackwitch spent several days just placing rocks.
Yeah, so there's your 30-hour comment right there.
Yep.
So also, from Mod D Baker, a whole bunch of new monster concept overhauls. The Banshee. That looks scary looking. The Wallasalki, which, you know, that one goes back directly to that old age old era of RS2 in the Waterbirth dungeons there. The frogs. Frogs. Who would have ever thought we would have had a rework frog? The frog.
No, that's a frog eel. That's a creature creation from the Tower of Life.
Oh, okay. Where's Rocknar from?
He's one of the guys that goes in the oubliette in the house. Okay. He's the monster. He's the boy. And he still has that old model in game, that one on top of the
photo. I can imagine
you can build that in your RuneScape 3 house now.
Yeah, your house that nobody goes to, right?
Sad.
Also, the star sprite from the the Crash Star minigame.
It still looks like a Teletubby. I'm not mad about it.
Getting your graphical rework there. You remember a year ago in Fresh Start Worlds how powerful those Crash Stars were for mining?
Yeah, they've always been powerful. That's a good D&D.
Yeah, people didn't realize that.
It got released around the same time as the Evil Tree, which is not aged well.
No. Mods Camel, Abe, and Rain are working on, of course, the necromancy-themed Rex Matriarch.
Yep.
That'll be another good boss to get into necromancy with when that one arrives.
Yep.
So.
Yep, very exciting. And Skeleton Dino.
And speaking of Mod Ryan and other necromancy-related content pushes, he says he started to port some of the more advanced systems from necromancy, which is, of course, mostly behind-the-scenes work, but it will streamline combat development going forward, and it's foundational work that will aid the combat beta. But something that does lead to is the updated tool tips for the other styles, like we got with necromancy.
Good.
So, yay.
They've updated tool tips like 4 times, I swear, in the last couple of years, but they've been an improvement every time, so keep it up.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's just really important to have these game jam weeks to let the devs work on what they want to work on, because so many of them play RS. It's a wonderful source of gathering ideas to see, you know, what's needed and whatnot. And some of them are like Mod Stew and Ryan are just so tapped into their respective communities of quests and lore for Stew, combat for Ryan, and whatnot. So,
Yep.
Alrighty, well, that brings us to the end of our programming this week. We only have a handful of achievements. I'll just rattle them off. It's the waning down of people's necromancy journeys. So this week we have Mr. M with 99 necromancy on the 26th, Breezy with 99 construction on the 25th, Bartnells with 99 necromancy on the 24th, Tiztalk Rex with 120 necromancy on the 22nd, and Ling01 with 120 necromancy on the 21st. Well done, everyone.
Woo! Ooh, congrats.
Job.
All right. Faxi, you said you have a stack of picks of the week lined up for us. So what do you got this week?
I do. I'm continuing the theme. Every time on the show for the second half of this year, I think we're just going to do only cozy. We're doing cozy games, cozy music, cozy books. So we're keeping it cozy. Last time was funny cozy fox game. This time it's a like farming management sim type thing. It's a game called Fey Farm that was released on the 8th of September for Switch and PC. And it is very much along the lines of Stardew Valley and Animal Crossing and those kinds of games where it is, you've got like your very standard, like, oh, there's a procedurally generated little mine and there's stuff. It's the art direction on it is very much Animal Crossing meets like the Miis from the Nintendo Wii.
Oh, okay.
Like that's the characters, their facial expression, they look like, it's wild. But it's generally like fey and magic themed. And the biggest thing that this one does differently than like a lot of those games is that it has a jump button. I know, big whoop. But you unlock a double jump after the second part of the, early on in the story, after the first arc. And that double jump lets you like jump on top of houses and trees. You can go like pretty much anywhere. And it, like, the movement in it feels great. And it's just, like, if you're a person who likes those kind of games, this is one that I think is worth checking out. I'm about 20 hours in, I think, if I wanted to push it to 100%. It would probably be, like, 60 to 80 hours. It's not huge, but it's, like, it's been a really good job so far. I think the full story is probably, you're looking about 30 to 40 hours, if I'm, like, guessed based on how far into it I am.
How much time did you spend in the character creator?
I spent a long time in every character creator. I think this one was probably... It's not crazy. There's not a bunch of sliders or anything. Probably, like, 20 minutes or so.
Okay, so not...
But I spend a long time in every character creator. That's, you could absolutely just pick a default and be good. But it's like, it doesn't have as much depth as something like Stardew Valley, where you've got quite so many NPCs. It doesn't, you know, but it's got, again, the story is good. There's a little bit of jank occasionally, but it's relatively stable, I'm going to say. I ran into an infinite money glitch lasted until I had to reload the game. Oops. Because things were not quite working well at one point. And apparently a few other people who've had that issue found on Reddit. But like, for the most part,
had one of the photos that was Halloween harvest theme. Then two photos down, they got a nice wintry Christmas theme there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's very much, you know, the Harvest Moon, one of the many children of the Harvest Moon series. And they keep the seasons, they keep the, like, there's bug catching in this. Feels very Animal Farm-y. Or Animal Crossing-y. Animal Farm, that's a... George Orwell, we're not gonna... Anyways. Yeah, just nice, cozy. If you're looking, it's cozy season. Game is good.
All right, sounds good. That's available, your type of game, pick up. Available on Steam, available on Switch as well. I assume you're playing it on Steam?
I am.
PC? Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Radio then. Tanis, what have you been doing on RS this week?
A little bit of wood cutting. Went back to chopping some elder logs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working. You could, you know, I can always count on skilling to right the ship, I guess.
Yeah, kind of recenter ourselves, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with some good old fashioned AFKing.
Yeah.
That's good. How is that going for money wise and whatnot? The wood economy these days.
Mm-hmm. You know, the older I get, the more I play, the more I'm just keeping them for my own brains for, you know, double XP week, what have you.
All right, fair enough. Well, when it comes to me this week, I have been mainly doing necromancy, about an hour and a bit of rituals a day, and then an hour or so of Raziel. And as I mentioned yesterday, got in short succession of each other the headpiece and the feet wraps. So that's noise. Progressing.
Raziel's socks.
Yeah, Raziel's slippers or socks, as people have called them. So that's progressing nicely. Gradually bringing the kill times on that down, and it's like we said in the content of the necromancy overview. Easy to learn on top, takes a while to master with that, and that's really what I've been doing on these fights with the free death week since the familiars aren't dying, is I've just been experimenting a lot more, experimenting with being a little bit more risky when it comes to, you know, how much do I have the familiar fire itself off? How much do I, you know, rely on life transfer instead of, you know, just trying to get it all in one life, that sort of thing. So it's been kind of a game of refining the kill methods and whatnot at Raziel there. So I've actually really been enjoying that. And no, it's not because I got two drops in quick succession like that. I was enjoying it before. I was enjoying it before I got the drops. But you know, like you said, Tanis, you need to recenter yourselves sometimes, right? And folks will know we conveniently didn't talk about the Hero Pass stuff this week because we wanted to wait until the actual content dropped. But you know, just with all that discussion in the community about that, I found I needed a recentering too. And you know what that was for me again? Just doubling down on farm runs again.
Just hey, for the hell of it. There you go.
So, yeah. Herbs and back grapes. Herbs, grapes, everything like that. So, and by the way, folks, grapes, really good money these days.
People are using those super brews.
Yeah, and the Guthix ones too. So,
yes.
Thaxi, yourself?
I mean, like I said, I raid pretty much daily. I live in the raid FC. Done a couple of just odds and ends Reaper tasks. I'm not really pushing them. Just slowly building back up a stack of points, make myself some new amulets. And I've done a lot of wood cutting. I decided that was the thing that I wanted to just, I wanted some AFKing. I wanted some just RuneScape, good old fashioned, like Dennis saying AFK. And so I cut about 8,000 Elder Locks. I got two of the Imkondo hatchets, put one on the tool belt, augmented the other. Went through several thousand charges on Dwarven tools, and have just been.
It's nice, isn't it, wood cutting now, hey?
I mean, yeah. I mean, again, I can't speak to the rebalanced XP rates because the Dwarven tool was taking it all. I just started, like, I got my full second Matic, or full second axe, and I think I've got a piece or two already at the next one. And I only just started getting XP on my tool because I just used the last of the Dwarven toolbox. But it's been a good little moneymaker. It's been nice and AFK. Good, like I did.
You
could
throw those
like
logs into the plank maker now and make elder planks.
I could do that. What I have done instead is throw them into the GE and make money.
Okay.
But yes, that is an option. I have 120 construction, remember, so I don't really
right,
the planks.
Enough.
Other people can
and
have
you
fun.
Have the pet for that.
I do. It's just runecrafting, strength, and fire making left.
Nice.
That's been my week. Is a little bit of PVM and a lot of wood cutting, and it's
so interesting.
Lovely.
Like we didn't plan this. We didn't plan this week that this was going to be us all going back to our, you know, core things in RS that we do and. Have defined us for this week. It wasn't planned like that's what this segment was going to be, but I think that's all what we all needed to do and what we all wanted to do after the few weeks that we've had, and it's just been really refreshing, hasn't it? I think we can all agree with that, right?
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes you just want to cut through the noise, get back to the simple game that you want to play. You know, you just want to cut some, or you just want to go farm some herbs, you know, like
it's
and just cut out the noise.
of getting achievements checked off. I wouldn't have been woodcutting, to be honest, if it wasn't for the comp rec. The next thing I'm doing is going to be hunting for raptor, for heads for the raptor, and then doing some anima fletching. Because that's just, you know,
it's, have fun with
back
that.
Back to the roots, back to the achievement grind.
I will have fun with that. But
more Slayer.
And, you know, I also have to say, alongside that, centering ourselves, it's one thing that I always enjoy doing is talking to our community as well. So just a reminder on that. Friends chat is bits, bytes, pop in there if you want. Mm-hmm. Say hello. Don't say hello. Just sit in there. It's up to you. It's perfectly fine. But we're always willing to have those chats. And that's what this podcast is for. It's to share what we've been doing on RS, discuss the update of the week, and discuss what has wound up to be the current content season of Necromancy, which I think is just interesting to look back at this point. So that's why we had this week. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. But we're here each and every week. And if you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, best way to do that is to subscribe. We're on a whole myriad of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple, Google, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and more, of course, YouTube as well, youtube.com/RSBNB. There we have some nibbles. We have some shorts there that we've been trying out, some fun little things that people enjoyed with Tannis's motorboating and invention. People really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
So, of course, look for all that and more. But, of course, thanks for the list. Thanks to, oh boy, you can tell what time it is.
Yep.
Speaking abilities are ending. It's time to end the show. Thanks to all the listeners for always being here and allowing us to do what we do here, and our wonderful Patreon supporters, but also, of course, thanks to our co-host for this episode as well. Well, Tannis and I will be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Until then, see you then, everybody. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.